So what I was thinking about doing was I want to share with you three stories from three different races, okay? And then I've got 4 points that I want to talk about from the three stories, okay? And we can learn a lot from looking at like these people who are competing against each other. It's not really about like the people, it's about the character that comes through when we start learning about these different people taking on different challenges. Okay, so in 1983, some promoters in Australia came up with an idea for a race. And what they wanted people to do is to run, it's like an ultra marathon race. They wanted people to run from Sydney to Melbourne. Okay. Now that doesn't sound like it, you know, you just think Australia, like they're really close together, sounds really close, but it's like about 550 miles. Okay. So they wanted people to run from Sydney to Melbourne, 550 miles. Now, I know how long this is because I have taken a train from Sydney to Melbourne overnight in an economy thing. And it was like, if you've flown Ryanair or Southwest, you think that's bad. Like try taking a train from Sydney to Melbourne, 12 hours overnight. It's bad. Okay. Back in the days when like, you know, $40 for the difference between flying and like going on a train meant a lot. It was like, man, I've got to take the train. And anyway, that was crazy. Okay. So they decided they were going to put up some serious money to try and get the best athletes in Australia to come and enter this race. So they put up $10,000. Okay. Now let's just imagine it's $100,000 today, just for the sake of our story, $100,000 to win a race to run 550 miles. So they gathered up the best racers across Australia. Now remember, this is the 80s. So they had all these people in their romper suits, you know, like the track suits. They were just amazing. The whole deal, they turn up with the headbands, the visors, you know, like fluorescent colors, like they were ready to go on some, you know, Adidas video or something. And they turn up and they're like looking around like, okay, who are the competitors who are going to be coming into this race? And then along comes a 61-year-old farmer. Now, the 61-year-old farmer was so out of place that he was wearing a hat, like a baseball cap. He was wearing like dungarees, like overalls. He was wearing gumboots in case it rained and a t-shirt. And he decided he was going to enter this race running 550 miles from Sydney to Melbourne. And of course, all the cool kids in their tracksuits look over and they're like, a 61-year-old farmer. They all start cracking up laughing. Like, who is this guy? What does he think he's doing entering this race? Doesn't he know that he can't win this race? He's 61 and we're in our 20s. So we're like going to smash this guy. He's not even going to have a stand. Now, Cliff didn't know any of this. Cliff was the name of this guy. He hadn't read Runner's World Weekly. He hadn't been coached on how to run an ultra marathon race. He didn't know what the rules were. He just turned up. And they were coming along with the microphone asking the racers, you know, like, how do you think you're going to do? And the camera turns to Cliff and they put the microphone in his face and they say, how do you think you're going to do? He says, I'm going to win the race. And they all start laughing like, what are you talking about? Win the race. Well, why do you think you could win this race, Cliff? So, well, you know, I'm from a farm and it's like 2,000 miles, this farm. And sometimes it starts raining like it is in Dallas today. And I have to go out because we can't afford a tractor or a motorbike. So I chase the sheep and I have to move them into safety. Everyone's like, is this guy for real? Like, is this some like A-level troll going on? I guess they didn't have trolls of the 80s. And so soon enough, boom, the race is on and the race starts. And of course, what happens? The cool kids in their tracksuit to go in, they're running. They're like, yeah, see you later, old man. Ha ha, sucker. And they're running. And Cliff is left in the dust. He is just, he's Gonski. Like, they're just, it's over. Like, Cliff has been left behind. Okay. Well, at the end of the first day, what Cliff didn't know, and apparently this is how you're supposed to win ultra marathon races, is you run for 18 hours and you sleep for six. So at the end of 18 hours, they all went to sleep. And now Cliff, I'm sorry, you won't be able to see this properly on the Zoom, but Cliff had this thing that was called the Cliff Shuffle, okay? And he ran like with his arms down by his sides and he ran like this. Okay? The end of 18 hours, all the kids went to sleep. Cliff kept running. just keep running. And they wake up, and Cliff has now closed the gap. He's only about 5 miles behind after a day. And then they get up and they start racing, leave him behind. Okay. And then they go to sleep after 18 hours. And Cliff just keeps running, just like this. Never stopped. So they wake up, and Cliff's a little bit behind again. And they set off, they pass Cliff again for the third day. They go to sleep after 18 hours. Cliff just keeps running. Then they wake up after the third night, and they're behind. And they're like, they start to panic, like, what are we going to do? So they start to hit the gas a little faster to try and catch up. But of course, they haven't trained for this because they're used to running in a certain way. And so some of them start to get injuries. Some of them start to get things that start, their bodies start falling apart in ways that they've never experienced. Now, these people are like the people who are conditioned athletes. They run ultra marathons all the time. And so they keep running. Some of the best people drop out. And at the end of the fourth day, Cliff is ahead by significant margin. And so they go to sleep. And Cliff carries on again, just running with his arms by his side like this. Cliff Young succeeded in going from Sydney to Melbourne in 5.5 days, and he won the race and beat the previous record by more than 2 days.
Wow.
A 61-year-old farmer who had never run an ultra marathon in his life beat all of the young upstarts, the people who had the gear, the people who had the coaching. He just to keep going. He didn't sleep for 5.5 days. He just kept going. Okay. Here's a second story for you. In the early 1900s, there was a race to see who could build the very first man-piloted airplane. And there was a gentleman by the name of J. Pierpont Langley. And J. Pierpont Langley, I mean, he had degrees from some of the best universities in America. He was a director of the Smithsonian Institute. He was a professor at Harvard. His friends were some of the most richest and successful people in America. He was friends with Alexander Graham Bell and Andrew Carnegie. And in fact, he was so highly sought after that the government decided to give him $70,000 to try and build the first airplane, the world's first flying airplane. Okay. He was given the $70,000. So he went out and hired the best people on the planet, like people who knew aeronautics and all kinds of physics and all kinds of things, joined his team to try and build this airplane. And now his first idea, because of what was around at the time, was to use an engine from a train, like an internal combustion engine that would have a boiler that would power this propeller. And he got this airplane that he put together, and they put it in the Potomac River, and they launched it from a catapult. And unfortunately, it was too heavy. It went up, and then it went straight back down again into the river. Okay. So he tried again. He made some changes. He made the frame a little bit lighter, and then launched it again, and it went straight up, and of course, straight back down in the river again. And so as he was doing this across a couple hundred miles away, a couple of bicycle mechanics had an idea on how they thought that they should build the world's first airplane. And their idea was to use lightweight materials. And because they were bicycle mechanics, they took engines from like little motorcycles to try and power the propeller to make it work. Now, they had no connections. They didn't have any money. They were working nights and weekends. They didn't have degrees from Harvard. Their friends were not Andrew Carnegie and JP Morgan. They were just some bicycle mechanics. But no one had ever told them that they were supposed to have degrees in order to achieve something, that they were supposed to have connections, that they were supposed to have a lot of particular tools that they needed, okay? And so on 1903, December the 17th, they made two flights of the first manned airplane with none of the advantages that J. Pierpont Langley had. Okay, third story. We know the story of the 20-mile march. Probably you've heard it in the induction that we have. Okay, there were two gentlemen trying to race to the South Pole to see who could be the first one to make a trip there. And there was on one side Scott and on one side Amundsen. Now, Scott was trying to make like the most innovative machinery at the time. He was trying to find the thing that would actually get him there the fastest. And on the other side was Amundsen. Now, Amundsen didn't know all of this thing about innovation and machinery and things like that. He was like, well, I guess what I should do if I'm trying to make this journey is go and visit with some Eskimos and see how do they survive in cold conditions, because I don't really know all this innovation and stuff, but like, let's see how other people survive so I can learn. Now, they had two completely different approaches on how they were going to arrive at the South Pole. And so here's a journal entry from their journal, same day, okay? So Scott wrote, I don't know how people can go out of their tent today. In his journal, Amundsen wrote, we went 15 miles today despite the unpleasant conditions. One guy saying, I don't even know how I could get out of my tent. The other guy saying, we made 15 miles and it was unpleasant, okay? Now that's code for like a blizzard and like snowed in and the whole thing, okay? And so they had these two different approaches. Amundsen would go out and try and go 20 miles no matter whether it was rainy, sunny, whether it was easy or hard, he would go 20 miles and stop. Whereas Scott would wait until conditions were good and then he would go as far as he could. He would drive his team, his machinery, his dogs as fast as he could, and then he would stop. And he might take 3 days off. And oftentimes, when they started out, it kind of was like neck and neck. They're going about the same distance. But over time, the conditions deteriorated. And as the conditions deteriorated, Scott found himself staying in his tent more. And he also started to get more desperate because he probably thought that Amundsen was significantly further ahead. And so when the day was fine, he would drive his machinery, drive his animals even further, which would mean that they weren't able to go the next day or the day after that, and they needed longer to rest, okay? And so we know the story that Amundsen ended up beating Scott to the South Pole because of his fanatic discipline to just go 20 miles every single day and try and go as far as he could, even if he didn't make it 20. He did his absolute best to say, we're not going to sit in a tent. And when times are really good, we need to pause and say, we're not going to overextend ourselves. Okay. So let's talk about what can we learn from these three stories of these three different groups of people taking these three different things. Okay.